Hi guys, welcome back to Teachers Off Duty Podcast. For this very special episode of Teachers Off Duty, we are so excited because we have some special guests for you.
With the start of Black History Month, we thought it would be a great idea to pass our platform off and our mic to a group of Black educators. So we have Mrs. M's Closet, we have Deanna Smith, and we have Shibby here with us today. We're doing this in an effort that we can hopefully continue to do more Black panels and hopefully promote and an understanding of what it means to uplift Black educators and continually advocate for ourselves to be anti-racist.
We hope that you enjoyed this week's episode and enjoy the dialogue and the conversations and learning the different tools that we can use to support Black educators.
Welcome to Teachers Off Duty. We are about to take this thing over.
We taking it over today. It's going to be so lit. We got so many great discussions for you. Well, let's get into our intros.
My name is Shivy Brooks. I am an educator in the Metro Atlanta area. Man, I'm excited to be here with y'all and sharing space with y'all. Sis, you want to tell the people who you are?
Yes. Hey, y'all. My name is Dr. Deanna Smith, and I am also an educator from the LA area, and I'm here to just tap into this fabulous conversation.
Yo, what's up, y'all? My name is Miss M. I'm a comedian out here, but I'm also a teacher out here in D.C. Make sure you're following me on @MissM_Closet on Instagram and TikTok.
We have the opportunity to, like, take over the platform here at Board Teachers.
I'm excited. And
I think it's like it's a really lit opportunity for folks to hear like our voices and learn a little bit more about us. What do you think is part of like the secret sauce or like the thing that like the teacher community might be missing when they don't get to catch our voices, when they don't get to hear from folks from our community?
We end up with incidents like the Capitol. We end up with incidents like George Floyd. Mm-hmm. We end up with incidents where certain things are being taken out of schools. They're on the banned list. We have incidents where people are really just insensitive to cultural norms, even though they're teaching in schools that are of different cultures. And so I think that us coming into this space gives people the opportunity to learn if that's the space you're choosing to be in. So that way you can be the best educator you can be while helping these amazing kids be the best adults, humans that they can be.
Right.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you have nothing to lose and everything to gain from just listening and hearing other voices, like opening yourself up, whether it's, you know, a podcast, whether it's social media, just understanding that there doesn't have to be a myopic view. You can hear other things and engage and explore other ideas. I think it's really helpful for teachers, especially teachers who are faced, you know, our world is changing. Yeah. The demographics are changing. There's a lot up in the air right now. And if you don't, you know, tap in and listen to other perspectives, you might find yourself in a position where you're not able to meet the needs of your students. But not just that, like on a human level, it's just you become a better person by listening to different stories and different ideas. So even just for yourself, it's really beneficial to just, you know, tap into other things.
So in today's time where we got so much pushback for how we show up in the classroom, the things we could talk about in the classroom, the books we can include in the classroom, right? All the stuff.
Yeah.
Right. For me, I teach in an urban area. Right. I teach in Riverdale, Georgia, which is on the south side of Metro Atlanta.
Okay.
Where my district is 100% Title I. Right. Yeah. So that comes with a certain kind of energy.
Absolutely.
Given the demographics of the schools that y'all teach in, what is it like for you being a Black educator who shows up how we show up?
How we show up.
Fill in the blanks and understand.
100%.
Right? Like, you know.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, you know.
So we show up how we show up. What is that like for you?
It's been great. And I was telling, when we were in the car on our way here, I was like, I wouldn't trade my kids for anything. Mm. I love being there. And even with all of the struggles or anything that they bring every day, I love them so much, and I love just being able to enlighten them. I love being able to be their mentor even after they leave my school. They still reach out, and so I love being able to just be that positive influence for them to look up to. I love being able, you know, we come from similar neighborhoods, and so I'm able to really just really help them get to their dreams and let them know your dreams are very much possible. Like, please don't allow where you're born to dictate where you're going. Definitely. And I have to always say that we have to continue to just be great and also be able to learn from our mistakes and things like that. And so I love it. I love teaching in Title I schools. I don't think I would never not teach in a Title I school. My experience has always been good.
Are you on purpose about that?
Yes. Yeah. I have to, and I have to teach the people that come from where I come from because only I can go in the classroom and speak to my kids the way that I speak to them because I get it. We used to get food from the church. We was only shopping at Goodwill, and it wasn't because it was a trend.
Yep.
It was because that's all we could afford.
You feel me?
All the furniture, all the furniture in our home came from the thrift store,
right,
or whatever. All the clothes we wore came from the thrift store. So I get it when people are doing that. The reason I know how to do my own hair is because we couldn't afford to go out and do all those kinds of things. But I still wanted it done, so I learned how to do those different types of hustles, and that's what I teach my kids. I grew up, I have a lot of traumas too, and so I want them. I don't want you to allow your traumas to dictate where you're going, because I can take you to a prison right now and they all got traumas too. And so you got to decide which path you're going to go. Are you going to allow these bricks of life to knock you down, or are you going to catch the bricks that are thrown at you and build some steps and step about your situation?
What's it like, in your opinion, for us to do all the things that she's talking about, but you got folk on the policy side,
right,
pushing back and pushing down on that work?
To answer like your two questions, right, for me, I've worked my teaching really has been in California. So I've worked in schools where it's truly diverse, not like there's one overrepresented population. Like the first school that I worked at when I first became a teacher, it was like a third Black, a third, you know, Latino or Latinx, and then a third like everything else, like Vietnamese, Filipino, Indigenous, like everybody was there. So I really had to understand that being culturally responsive doesn't just mean knowing one culture's practices or knowing about the food. Mm. It's about how you show up. It's about how you engage. It's about being open to learning and listening. And it's about making sure that your students like see themselves and feel heard, loved, and seen in your classroom.
Mm.
And so I love working with Black kids, but the reality is, you know, there's just not a lot of schools where that's possible. Mm-hmm. But when I get the opportunity, I do think it's critical. Representation, we understand that representation does matter. There's statistical data that tells us that when kids have a teacher that looks like them, they benefit. They learn differently. They learn more from that teacher, right? And when even students, regardless of their race, when they have Black teachers, it's a positive experience. Like having a Black teacher positively impacts you whether you're a young Black child or not.
They got studies that literally say when you have Black educators in your school, it increases graduation rate.
It does.
Increases student performance. And
absolutely.
I think like it is like the appreciation for the presence of Black educators,
I think
many times goes like overlooked.
And
I would even say like in our own community, like you got to think kind of the byproduct of how things have changed in American society. At some point, like a lot of Black folks started to feel like going to other people's schools was better for us.
And it's still like that though.
It's
still like that. And it's sad because they're not going to be in the school with the Black culture because of the resources.
Copy.
So, like, if I have a baby with an IEP, and this baby's in a school that's underfunded,
can't catch them
based on the community, and a charter school hasn't taken it over yet. We won't get into that right now. that's a whole other topic,
right.
But you know they gentrified too.
You trying to
too.
Open all the cans of worms?
I mean, look, I'm just keeping it 100.
We just got here, ma'am.
I'm just keeping it 100. But if I have a baby with an IEP and they're at an underfunded school where they don't have the proper resources to actually help this child grow academically and meet their needs, then either they need to be, they're either going to try to get into a charter school, because we know the charter schools, you know, they're gentrifying the Black community by taking over the schools instead of just
actually. And causing the closure of the neighborhood
schools. Like I said, I'm not going to do that right now.
I mean, you know.
Period. But you have to make sure that the baby, so as a if I was a parent and my child had an IEP and they were in a school that just couldn't afford like the Lexias, couldn't afford the Read 180 programs, couldn't afford to have teachers who are qualified to put in that those phonological skills that they actually need to become better readers, because I'm a special education ELA teacher, they either have to go somewhere else or the babies are going to be in high school. And we've seen that all over TikTok recently from the Baltimore schools, where people, those videos have been going viral, where parents are like, my child is in high school and they're reading on a third grade level.
Bruh, nah, first off.
That does happen.
Are you about?
No. Because sis was wrong.
Okay, but which sister are you talking about?
No, we gonna name that.
But what sister are you talking about?
The one where the son was like a high school, he's supposed to be a senior, and she turned around and he was a freshman.
She was wrong.
Bruh.
She was wrong.
At some point, we gotta have some accountability.
I'm agreeing with you. But did you see the
first off, this is my black passionate voice. All right, this is not my argumentative voice.
I'm saying we're not talking about the same video.
You gotta clarify that.
Yeah,
I'm talking about there was two Baltimore videos. So that one I agree with, where the son had failed 22 classes, missed over 200 days of school, all those kinds of things, and she didn't know.
I failed that video.
Y'all failed my son.
No, that was her. That was, you know, you're a parent, you gotta check in. But there was another parent who's like, my child is reading on a third grade level.
Yeah.
And I've been in places that are underfunded 100. Where the kids, either the special education teacher was lacking because it's a small group, and so they're able to get away with some things.
And we agree it's even worse now.
Yeah.
After post-pandemic. But then let me ask you this, though, because there is so much focus on like learning loss and the effect of the pandemic.
That's
and whatnot, right? Okay, boom. Now, I think we lost something like 700,000 Americans over the course of like the heat of the pandemic, or more.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Definitely
yeah.
could be more. We agree that in American history, the Civil War is considered one of the bloodiest periods, one of the greatest losses of American life in the history of America, right? We lost 600,000 Americans in those 3-4 years of the Civil War, right? Somebody, don't fact check me on my social studies
just
and like
relax,
come for me.
Taking
like,
the information.
We're using estimates.
So like, excuse me, but actually, But we lost 600,000 people during the course of the Civil War.
Yeah.
We lost over 700,000 people over the course of COVID, right? Have you ever heard of a conversation about learning loss that occurred during the Civil War?
No.
Have you heard any? You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like our
but it's an excuse.
I feel like we ain't focused on the things that actually matter. And furthermore, to kind of bring it back home, no, I don't feel like we're grading schools in our community the right way.
Oh,
like, because it ain't accounting for how we got to be the counselor and the uncle and the auntie and the food security piece.
Please let me talk about it.
Go on then.
Please let me talk, because that's one thing that I will say is that in our community, sometimes the expectations for academics has been diminished because of the other things that we are doing in schools. We're counselors, we're hairstylists. I done braided hair between classes.
Yeah, but your CCRPI scores ain't getting a bump for helping somebody's hair look good to go to class.
Because I believe in Atlanta, y'all also have a lottery system for like selective high schools.
Magnet schools,
in places like DC and New York, they have to apply to high schools if they don't want to go to their neighborhood school.
Right.
And so that application process looks very similar to college. But see, sometimes at some schools, the expectations for academics has been lowered. And so kids are coming out with a 4.0. But it's not meeting the same expectations that we would get on the other side of town.
Rigor is not even across the board.
So what happens when they get into these selective high schools that are top-notch because their GPA is high, they get there and they, they struggle so hard.
Yeah.
Because that's not the level even close that they were doing.
But
and
the same thing happens in college, though.
It does.
Like a lot of us go to college and you got to take the 100-level courses.
I mean, there's a lot in, like, I feel like we've covered so many topics in the last, like, 2 minutes.
Right. That's who we are.
There's a lot in that, though, because you have a couple of things working together. First, like, rigor. Rigor is an interesting concept because, like, what is considered rigorous in a lot of times is really just how closely you can perform whiteness in a school. So the metric should not. So
I need my soundboard so I can drop a bomb on that.
Rigor
one.
Is like kind of tricky though, because it's like even when we can't live and die by these standardized test scores, right?
We have to do two things. This is the thing.
As a black educator and just as black people in general, any group of people that are struggling to like unshackle themselves from 400 years of systemic racism, what you have to do is two things at the same time. You have to freedom dream a reality where our schools are not used, those metrics are not used. Because when you think about it, like the MAP score is not as important to me as like, did you learn how to have discourse? Did you learn how to engage critically? Did you learn how to ask questions? But at the same time, the MAP scores is what's keeping the lights on.
Right. But, so, but, and then them parents, them parents who the are parents, picking where they're going to buy a house.
That's where that's looking all at they care about.
They're looking at those. So that's the thing. I'm not moving there.
As people, we can't get, we have to do two things at once. We have to be preoccupied with making sure that our kids have what they need to succeed. Yes. We have to make sure that our kids are prepared. A lot of Black teachers say, oh, I want to, I'm hard on them because it's going to be even harder later. And I want to, it's like, you don't, you want them to be prepared too, but then we also have to actively be striving and questioning, what are these metrics that we're using for a good school? Like, is that what a good school looks like? Because to me, when I'm thinking about where my kids are going to go to school, it, test scores are important, but at the same time, like in this world that we're living in right now, 2023, what are your mental health resources? Like, is my child going to feel loved, seen, and heard? Like, will they know that Blackness all by itself is excellence? Will they know, like, all of these stories, like, what stories will they hear about themselves in that school? And that's something as Black educators, we need to make sure we're tapping into that as well.
It's the hand raise.
I have a strong
hand.
Yo, that's a strong teacher hand. Okay, let me just put that out there. That was an example of what to do. No, so when you were speaking, I don't know if y'all have ever been asked this question at your schools, but would you allow your kids to go to the school that you teach at or have taught at?
I would, because that. But that's the thing. I think we have to be really critical about what makes a good school. It can't just be about test scores.
Yeah.
And so it's navigating that the material reality of Black schools. The reason why they're being gentrified by these charter schools is because they're failing by these metrics that they created, right? And that's the reason why we keep losing these
but
schools.
But it's also because we don't pay attention to state-level legislation.
Yeah, and we don't go to those meetings.
For the past, like, 10-plus years,
yes.
they had already been setting it up to, first they set up the grading system.
Yeah.
Then they set up parameters for how you could deem a school failing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Then they set up consequences for what happens with it.
Yeah.
Then they set up the option to create state charters and all that.
They're playing the long game. It's masterful.
But this
it's
is
masterful.
Why,
this,
yo, let me High tell key. You. This is why I get so frustrated it's with us because I feel like we're never paying attention to the real problems. Yeah. Like, for example, if we're talking about improving schools across the board, why are we never having a conversation about separating property taxes from how we fund?
Instead, people are talking about learning loss. When I'm like, I'm talking, like, you're right. Well, you're talking way too much about learning loss and all of these buzzwords and people. So there's so many cooks in the kitchen and everybody. The problem is we problematize the students. And we're not talking about
Come
the system. Right. This is
Come
what I'm saying, though.
Give me a new word today.
It's focusing so much on, like, what the students are lacking, what the students are not doing, how the students are not performing. It's like, have we ever, like, thought about, like, does that make sense to you? Like, why is it? If 80% of Black and brown kids are not at or above reading level by the seventh grade, what does that tell you about what's going on? Is it the Black kids, or is it the metrics, or is it something else going on?
It's a mixture of a plethora. It's
a
lot of things, because a lot kids who don't come into school already knowing how to write their name, already knowing how the alphabet sounds, because I don't believe in, like, teaching ABCD, like, teach them
letter
how
sounds.
It actually sounds. Those kids tend to be start off behind.
Yep.
And even if it's not because of a disability, because you can be academically behind and not have a disability.
Good
I'm an IEP advocate, so I just want to put that out there. And so what happens when they're behind and there's no catch up ever?
Yep.
Like, if academics is not the forefront of your household, like, that's not built into your everyday, just a part of y'all's lives, the kid continuously stays behind. And by the time they hit middle school and they're doing other stuff, because as a kid gets older, they start dating, they start wanting to go out with, you know, they have other things that are not academic. Elementary is where you really want to hone in and get those foundation skills.
But it happens even before that, though.
It
so
does.
Like,
what,
everything you're talking
birth.
About
it
is
happens
like
when
a,
you're pregnant. Yeah. When you're pregnant with the child.
It's all a symptom of, like, privilege, right?
Yeah.
Like, and by privilege, I mean, like, were your parents educated?
Yep.
Were you know, and how much education did they get, and what were they exposed to?
Yeah.
Like, it we have to, like, overcome so, like, look, my
the
grandmother
hurdles.
Had a sixth grade education
right.
coming from Guyana, South America.
Right.
Right? So, like, for my family, I'm the first generation even born in America. Mm-hmm. The reality is, like, even as a Black person, like, we are the first generation of Black Americans born with full rights.
Yeah.
The first.
And now we lose them.
You feel me?
But anyway.
Right, in that part, right?
Now
so,
they're on the
so,
way out.
So, but you also got to keep in mind, to read, was illegal for us.
Yeah.
To learn.
To learn to read. Illegal for to us, teach a right? black and person so, to read was illegal.
So there you is would a, die. There is right. a generational, there is a multi-generational yeah. trauma.
Absolutely.
And deficit yes. that yeah. we're still working to overcome.
And y'all
right.
should
right
look
now.
Into epigenetics. It's very fascinating. There's a book called My Grandmother's Hands. And just read about epigenetics. It's crazy because our genes literally remember. Your genes are made... But like before you even draw breath. And yeah. that's the yeah. thing. For black people, the stakes shouldn't be that high. So a lot of times people are like, well, what can parents do? What can parents do? And it's true that I, you know, maybe I'll be controversial and say, I think some parents could and families could take a little bit more accountability. But oh, the thing sure. is like,
absolutely.
It should not be on a parent that their child is knowing everything they're supposed to know before they get to kindergarten. Like
absolutely.
The stakes are way too high. So I think we have to like really evaluate, is it equitable? Does it make sense that if I can't spell my name by the time I'm six, I'm gonna fail. Like, and that's no. what the data is showing. Like, the data is showing, like, you're in California, there was this study where they showed the amount of kids that were below grade level by the third grade. And what yeah. they did was they went and built more prisons because yeah. they knew that
where
those
kids, where they were going.
So the stakes are just too high. So I think it's definitely not just on black educators, but all educators to ask those big questions. Like, the stakes are really high for our kids, for a 6 year old to have to know all of this stuff, or else basically your entire life is going to go down the drain, right? It's something that we have to grapple with as a community and as educators to be more mindful of that systemic inequity that continues to happen.
We're going to have a lot of educators who teach in schools that don't look like ours
mm-hmm.
who
right.
are going to be listening to this right now. Yeah. Right?
Right.
And there's going to be a lot of folks who internally they're going to be like, yo, you know, what could I do to help? What could I do to support? What would you throw out there as a solid way for people to show up as true allies or co-conspirators, how yeah. people could really support our urban schools
right.
Or our schools who are not as well resourced?
I think number one is learn the community that you're in. So before I was an actual teacher, I was a long-term sub in Texas, and I was in a small town, and I was the only black person in the whole school district. And I had just came from Howard with a blonde afro. So that was fun. But one thing I did, there was no issues. You know, there was some racist situations taking place, but I learned my students, they were raising animals on campus. So they would show me, I would talk to them about it. Like, how do you do? I'm getting involved. That's not something that I'm going to do, but I want to know what that is. This was at an all white school. So let's transfer this over. If you are a person that's coming into, for example, an all black school, you should take on the same thing. I'm not telling you to come to school in a dashiki.
Please don't. In fact, we're
please
telling you
actually
not
don't
to
do that. Or whatever. Like the same way I didn't
clear.
Go buy a goat, you know, but I knew the
don't
different things. I was able to talk to them about that and like really bond with the students on that. I'm telling you to learn what's happening in the community. Don't be so scared of the community that you're teaching in, because this is where these babies live.
Mm.
And this is where they actually have to go home to. And this is their safe space. And so you need to come in with this love or whatever. I lead with love. I come in with love. I always remember what the lady said. People always remember how you make them feel.
That's right.
And so my goal, I that lives with me. People remember how you make them feel. And I've seen teachers that are not black literally come in and just talk bad about our babies. Talk bad, talking about, oh, they're horrible. They're bad. I can't stand these kids. They're going to be nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, who are you? Like, don't ever in your existence.
I don't know. I hear a lot of us be kicking it like that too, though.
True. I mean, so that does happen as well, because yeah. if you've never grown up in that space, see, it's different when I was around black people and then I went to a HBCU. I went to Howard. And then
I think we're hearing that for the first time.
Yeah. Have you mentioned this?
I didn't mention
your
it.
Black folk, when they go to an Howard? HBCU, like, yeah. they just be popping yeah. that yeah.
rolling in. Okay, but anyways,
shout out to Georgia State University, who graduates more black students than any HBCU in the country. I'm just saying.
Okay, well, you know, Androids and iPhones.
Whoa! Now y'all getting controversial.
That was spicy. I don't know how I feel.
Justice for PWIs. Okay, so anyway,
we're gonna bring it back. We're gonna circle back.
Yeah.
But it didn't make me uncomfortable in that space, but I have met Black people who also have the same questions as non-Black people who didn't grow up in that space. They grew up in a more bourgeoisie setting. Maybe they were the only Blacks in their
Black elitism. Is one of those things that we don't be talking about, man. That Black elitism is real. Like it even goes to that notion of, like, for a lot of our kids, it's like, yo, go to school, make good grades, go to college, get a good job, and then what? Leave.
Get out the hood.
And we don't talk about the brain drain that we indoctrinate into our kids, but they get mad at gentrification and displacement.
And it really comes down to deficit versus asset-based thinking. So an asset-based approach, and like asset pedagogies are things like culturally responsive teaching, anti-racist teaching, etc. You should really look into those. Any teacher should look into those. But I think it starts with understanding that, like, the community that you come into, let's say you do, you know, I'm talking to the teachers that are non-Black out there.
Yep.
When you come into the community, you are not coming in to help fix, save the community. Mm. If you're not coming into the community with an approach like a paternalistic, these pobrecitos, like these poor people, I need to like help
these
them.
What?
Wait, say it again.
Girl, you've been on that Babylon.
Say you're not Superman. You're not coming in as Superman. Say it.
I'm not dealing with y'all. Yeah. You're not Superman coming in here. Right. So I think it's really important for everybody to look into, am I having an asset-based approach about this community? Do I see my kids as like full people in their full humanity with stories to bring and things to share? They're coming into the classroom. Yes, and it's your job to educate them, right? Yeah. But like learning is built. It's not transferred. You're not transferring all of, you know, the wonderful things that you have and filling it into the empty vessel of a child. So it's really critical to come from, like, to start with the heart work. And you said, what can, you know, people that are non-Black do? Honestly, your internal work, you show up as yourself in the classroom and you bring all of your biases.
Absolutely.
You bring all of your traumas. You bring all your little quirks that you have. And it's not a bad thing necessarily. It's not a bad thing to have different experiences. But when you're not mindful of it, that's when you become dangerous.
Right. Absolutely.
So that's when, if you don't have that asset-based approach, right? If in the back of your head you're thinking, oh, I moved to the hood to like save these kids, like on some Michelle Pfeiffer type of stuff.
Picture that hangs up where it's all the Black kids and them in the middle.
Is
and they
like
take it everywhere. They put it on shirts.
No, exactly. I teach at a Title I school. It's like that Title I badge.
You don't have to.
Not your Black card, ma'am. Go on and put that thing up.
It's reducing kids to like a negative narrative that you've heard about Black people, and there's so much more than that. And so it's really critical that you interrogate, like, am I using a deficit mindset when I come to this environment?
I have a shirt that says Black children don't need saviors, they need believers.
Absolutely.
Right? And it is the notion of like really believing in and investing in our young people.
Yeah.
Not just telling them what they can be, but showing them how to get there. It is giving access to the resources to be able to get there. That's the things that I personally believe our kids need more than anything else. Like
you
can resource the hell out of a classroom or a school.
Yeah.
But if you're not like pouring into like the soul or the spirit of that kid to help them be able to see what's possible and then see how to make it possible, then it's like we missing it.
And how do you do that? For the non-Black teachers listening, probably what they're thinking.
Nah,
how do
real
I do
talk,
that?
So for the non-Black teachers listening, real talk, the best thing that you can give your kids is access to your network.
Absolutely.
Because many times, like, and that is like the facet of like gatekeeping from one community to another that stops opportunity.
Yeah.
If we're not opening up our network.
And what'd you say earlier? Language?
Is a love language.
Yeah.
Like putting people on to opportunity.
Yes.
To be able to do things that maybe they would not have been able to do otherwise. Like that's showing love. That's really believing in somebody.
And one thing I wanted to add, and I've said this multiple times, is showing empathy does not equate to lowering expectations.
This is facts.
And that's actually very disrespectful to do that. And those expectations, the babies can meet the expectations that are set.
Yeah.
And you can show empathy and love at the exact same time while holding the bar. And I see so many non-Black teachers and Black teachers lowering the expectation, whether it's to make it easier on them because they don't want to deal with the traumas and things that are, you know, that are happening.
That's real.
Speak on or it. They're lowering the expectation. Like, instead of, oh, you need to do this, they're lowering it down here. And that's what I was talking about earlier. Our babies are leaving the schools with this impression that they've done that their grade means this, and then they get to these other spaces that they still want to go to, and they struggle because I believe you got to hold that bar. And that's one thing I think students respect, and they know that you love them because you meet them where they are and let them meet the bar. They can meet it. They might not meet it that week, they might not meet it the next week, but they can meet the bar
year.
And you can still also check in with them and show that. But one thing I was, when we were talking earlier, having black teachers and things of that nature.
You try to rush to my next question.
No, but I was wanting to know, like, because I had a black teacher in kindergarten, and then I also had a black PE teacher all through elementary school. When was the first time y'all had a black teacher?
I'm going to answer that. I want to just say one quick thing.
Go ahead.
That I think, because I want you all also to look this up. It's called being a sentimentalist. It comes from Zaretta Hammond. But that's what you're talking about when you say lowering expectations.
Yeah.
I think a pitfall that I see is a lot of non-black teachers think that they're being culturally responsive by removing expectations. If you're struggling with that, look it up. It's called A Sentimentalist, Red Hammond. Anyway, but yes, the first black teacher. I was, I'm not the best person to ask about this because my first black teacher was when I was in my doctoral program, a couple of years ago.
Not the best person to ask?
That's what I'm saying. Like, I can only speak on the impact of not having a black teacher. I can't speak on, like, I never had that moment where it's like, oh my God, my teacher sees me and she's braiding my hair. And it's just like, that's never. I was that teacher for other people, but I did that, you know.
Ain't nobody ever braided my hair.
Listen, actually, you
know
what, y'all?
Ain't nobody braided my hair today, so you know what I'm saying?
I am from Spokane, y'all. Rachel Dolezal Land. Like, she's the person who does hair. And really? So I'm not even kidding. So that's not my
shout
experience.
Out to Ms. Wright. Hey, Ms. Wright.
And that's why, part of the reason why I became a teacher, and I loved, like, I had, you know, so many experiences over the years that filled my bucket of just being able to be in community with black women. And especially, I taught math and science, and that was really important for me because I was black women in STEM, you know. Started off coding on MySpace, and then I became a science teacher.
It's the air grab.
Black women in STEM,
yeah.
Baby.
Yeah. We're a thing.
Get the tech jack, ladies. Anyway, but yeah, so it was definitely challenging. But honestly, I didn't even realize what I was missing until I became the teacher myself and I saw the relationship that I was able to build.
Yeah.
And it made me really sad for baby Deanna because I was like, man, like, that was, I missed out on a lot of those opportunities.
To the point of like what you're talking about, I think it is relevant to ask someone like you that question because your experience is normal.
Yeah. Mm.
It's normal. We all know black male teachers are less than 2% of all teachers. Yeah. And like I ask people all the time, hey, when's the first time you had a black male teacher?
Coach D.
And it'd be crickets. Or, right.
Or
and
the then PE when coach. When they it's always like, the PE
why
coach.
Why the black male
D.
teacher always the damn you know gym teacher?
Coach
like,
D.
I don't understand.
He taught, me how to square dance and I love him.
Square dancing was lit though.
Okay, I'm from Texas.
You're definitely country.
Yeah.
My black male teacher taught me how to square dance.
Okay, that was a thing.
It was a
thing. And I can still do it to this day, but I will not.
We'll have the demo later. We will have the square dancing demo later.
I like it. I love it.
All right. And then look, we can play some Achy Breaky
Heart.
We can take it back to the 90s and go Achy Breaky Heart
hard. Okay. Yeah. Can't rise
some
above
of those country songs go hard, though. Not even
Mayo.
Like, anyway.
We just got flagged on YouTube.
Yeah.
Was that too close? Was that too good?
Was it too good? Your black card is about to get revoked. It was that good, okay?
Because like, I had a black coach that taught me how to play.
H.R. wrote a Darius record. He's black. Anyway.
But look, that's like all. Also, like, another thing, I think, like, a lot of times, like, especially for black male presence in the school, it tends to be, like, that gym teacher.
Yeah.
Or, like, we have to deal with the tax of being the disciplinarian.
Yes,
too.
That part. Yeah.
You know, do you find as a black female teacher, if you teach, especially in a school where there are not many other black educators, do you then become the impromptu, de facto disciplinarian in the classroom?
Yes, that is what happens whenever... Like, because I'm known as, like, a community champion or whatever. I won awards for it. I'm out in the community. And so have great relationships, not only with the students, but with the families.
Mm-hmm.
And so through those relationships, I'm able to help most of the kids whenever they're having their moments and things of that nature. However, that does not mean you just bring them and that's what happens.
Yeah.
You don't just send them and everything like that, because then you just become, it's like, if that's the case, like, let's give me a dean of student position.
Yeah.
Back.
Like, yeah. Let's get the pay that goes with that. Yeah. And so that's what happens, at least in the spaces that I've been in. Have you also experienced that?
I mean, and honestly, I recently learned about boundaries, and I had to put up a boundary.
Not recently? Listen, wait, you recently learned about boundaries?
Listen.
So I heard about this thing called boundaries.
No, but for real, though, as a woman and, a black woman especially, I was like, oh, am I? Okay, yeah, boundaries. Hell yeah.
Let's say no.
I'm saying. But that's, as a teacher, you don't, I really did not know that I could say no to that. And I hated it because I would always come home and be like, I'm a cop. They think I'm the behavior cop of the school. They send me all of the kid, call Miss Smith. Da, da, da. I am the
You're
op.
The op. Wait, hold on.
Right. And meanwhile... you finna go with me.
You look like you got that strong lead.
Do you need to take a walk?
Yeah.
Right. Let's walk.
Y'all saw how she grabbed the air, so you know that finger
Man,
point game.
And I always had the nails clacking and everything.
Oh,
but
no, not the nail clacking.
It was terrible because I wanted to be able to have a full dimension of relationships with my students, but when you become the behavior cop, all of a sudden it's just I was only talking to the kids that were having a hard time. I didn't get to kick it with my friends that were my kids that were actually doing well. So I think it's very important for teachers, though, to recognize that when you're dealing with behavior, you actually have a really unique opportunity to build a relationship with a student. Mm-hmm. And so when you call somebody else to handle that, I understand you're out of frustration, maybe you need to calm down or whatever, but you always want to make sure that you follow up, because you're exporting that relationship building moment to somebody else, and then all of a sudden the dean is the person that has a relationship with the student, and you you can't even get them to sit down in your classroom because they don't really talk to you. They only talk to the person that's coming in. So it can be an opportunity to build relationship that you really shouldn't pass up.
For our white colleagues, right? Yeah. Or non-black colleagues in general, who want to know how to show up better or support better the black educators that they teach alongside of, right? Like, we tapped in on how they should be showing up for the kids, but how do you show up for your coworkers? How can they better show up for us?
By showing up. And that comes from what we were just talking about. You can't fully show up if you're scared of the kids. You can't fully show up if you're over the kids. Mm-hmm. You can't fully show, because what happens is when I come pick up your class and they're off the chain, now I have to take time from my class to bring them back down from that. And now we have to talk. A lot of times they're coming out frustrated because you're not being consistent with your rules. Because once you're frustrated on that level as an educator, you're just throwing stuff out there.
Yeah.
One day it was be quiet. Today it's like, I don't care.
Yeah.
And so your inconsistency is frustrating the students. Now they have to come to me. Now we have to have a kumbaya up in the classroom, because now we got to figure it out. And so I think it's just showing up. It takes a village to raise a kid. So you must be a part of the village.
Yeah.
And so you can't be outside looking in.
I would say if you're a non-black person, whatever systemic challenges your students are experiencing, the black teachers are also struggling through this same system, right? So your black students are going to grow up to be black adults. So the struggles that you see your kids facing, you have to understand that might be what your colleague is also going through. And when you think about showing up and being an advocate, it includes being loud about it. I can't tell you how many times in a meeting I've advocated for something and then it's crickets. And then after
they
meeting,
hit you with the elbow bump.
Right, and then after the meeting, I'll give you an example. One of the best white coworkers I had, he would actually okay, what do you want me to pitch? Because if this goes bad, I don't want you to have to suffer the fallout. He would actually advocate, and we would get on the same team and strategize, and then he would bring challenging stuff up, or I would be like, hey, I'm going to ask for this or advocate for this, that, or the other, and he would be present in the meeting and stand up and show up. So you need to be there for your people, and just being cognizant and being aware, right? Understanding that we are, as much as we're all navigating the craziness that is teaching, we're navigating on a whole other level, which is teaching and racism.
Yeah.
So, we got one more ball, at least, that we're juggling. Yeah. So just being cognizant and aware of that is critical.
So today we're going to be having our amazing producer is going to read out some buzzwords.
And we are going
to
judge.
And we're going to see
if they are mispronounced or not.
If they're mispronounced.
If they're mispronounced, thank you very much.
Yes.
But we're also going to be
unseasoned,
saying
we are definitely definitely yes. on your head.
Yes, yes.
We're also going to be buzzing in if see if we know the word. And if we don't, you're going to hear, which means we didn't get it right.
Okay. So to start things off, the first buzzword is cap.
Wait.
No, you could just say it.
Oh, it means like it's not factual.
That was very PhD.
That is this is unfactual.
That was factual. Yeah. It means stop lying.
My sister's intelligent. That is Dr. Ooh, D. Don't play with her.
Factually inaccurate.
Yeah. I was about to be like, it's a lie. She said, that is factual. That
no
is
cap.
Not.
No cap.
No cap. Right. No cap. You get it. No
all cap. Right.
All right. So the next word on the list is mollywop.
That's Atlanta, right?
It might even be Atlanta.
No, but I feel like we were saying mollywop growing up.
Can you use it in a sentence?
Like
New York,
New Jersey. I feel like if you was like you mollywop somebody, like that's a verb.
Okay.
It's definitely a verb.
Okay.
Educator. It's a verb. I want to say it's like you go up and you like,
it's like a haymaker.
Like you mollywop.
Yeah.
Like,
and then,
like is that right?
You mollywop them.
Okay. You saw how I broke that down?
I need a ding sound. Like, I need a ding. Y'all, hey, in post-production, we need a notes.
Ping. Yeah, done.
I had to break it down.
What is the etymology of
what's
that?
The, like, yeah,
where's
mollywop.
Molly
it comes from the Greek term.
Molly might have actually got
Molly got whopped.
God bless
Molly. It got famous. It became a verb. Like, it happens.
When you beat her down so bad, it became a verb.
Oh,
yo.
My gosh. Yo.
Does that not happen? Like, people become verbs.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, no. That's why I was like, I feel like it's an action. It's a verb.
Yes.
It's an action. It's an action word.
All right. So our next one on the list is twin.
Twin, like that?
I don't.
What do you mean?
I don't think I know what that means. I
twin,
don't, like
a twin.
Can you use it in a sentence?
There it is.
Yeah, can we use it in a sentence, Alex?
Y'all do everything with you. You my twin.
Oh, like you my JR.
But you made me give like
you
context.
Like my JR.
That's
like,
what is a JR?
That's not
you
how this
chose.
Works.
First of all, you chose that sentence.
If this
you're
was a spelling bee, I'll be disqualified.
Man. Yeah, you chose that sentence to give, so that is on you.
You know, it's the helper.
You're
in
intelligent.
Me, you know?
So is that the same as a JR?
He's
like, oh, you my junior.
You're over scaffolding. Okay.
Like you my junior. Like you my son.
Your son, but see, your son is like kind of subordinating somebody.
Okay, but
you
your twin would be
like my little homie.
Like oh, twin would be like somebody. Y'all like right here.
For real.
Y'all like right here.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I got
like,
that
like that's
wrong.
Like the highest form of like endearment.
You can hit it. I got it wrong.
Yeah,
that's fine. I can accept when I've failed.
Yeah, that's good. And she's modeling that for the teachers and the students.
Absolutely, failure happens.
That's
y'all,
good
her
teaching
toes
practice.
Are crunching as she says that.
Internally, she is screaming.
First, stop, Captain.
Okay,
first, oh, it was
first of all, no cap.
It was cap.
Don't even do that.
That is factually
cap.
Incorrect.
Okay,
all right. The next one on the list is Phi.
Phi,
like.
Yeah.
Like
wait,
phi, fo, fi?
Are you saying first that off. Right? I think you're saying that wrong.
Sorry, is that shit not phi?
You gotta say it like that. It's kind of like when you say you can say daughter or daughters because I run that program, Miss Sims Daughters, and you gotta say it like that for it to.
I cannot.
Under no circumstances.
You got like a real like, daughter.
Absolutely not.
I said it the way I said it. Okay.
I said what I said. That's what you gotta
and
say.
And I said what I said.
That's on period.
And that's on period.
Now, do you know it or not?
No.
Okay.
I don't know that one. That must be
I actually don't know that. That gotta be ATL.
That's an Atlanta thing.
That gotta be an ATL thing.
FYE. Okay.
Like is that the same as
like fire?
Fire?
Okay.
Like, oh, that's fire.
Ding.
Like, that's...
Ding, ding, ding.
Okay.
Fire.
See, y'all
fire.
Paying me to be...
Yeah, but you're not getting the R.
Fire.
You ain't
no,
getting the R.
Fire.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
oh,
it's
that's
fire.
Fire. Like, that's when, like, you send a text and you just put the flame.
That's
like,
fire.
Oh, that's fire. Like, that's lit.
Correct.
It's lit.
Yeah.
All right.
Good job.
Good job.
Okay.
Good job.
We got it.
See, I ain't so
I love how we're like saying this. I love how we all say the same thing, but since we're in different places,
know,
we use different
like,
terminology.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Oh, like right. That's lit. Yeah.
Yeah, that's lit.
The
yeah.
result of fire.
Yeah, the result of fire. Something was lit.
Yes.
The next word on the list is slap.
Oh, that slaps.
Hmm.
What
I've
does
never
it mean?
Said that in my
define
existence.
That.
Please define it.
Slaps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It means, like, you know,
it hits hard.
It's yeah. It's yeah. a signifier that means like. yeah, I appreciate this. I'm enjoying it.
Can you use it?
Yeah.
So it'll be like,
that song is fire. It slaps.
No, like that. Oh, that song, that song.
I think it comes from like a knee slapper.
Yeah.
Like you're slapping your knee.
That's why I was hitting my knee. I was like, is that where it comes from?
Like, oh, I'm enjoying it.
Picture an old granddaddy on the porch, like slapping his knee.
Yeah. That's not Texas.
Slapping his knee.
Or you eat some food and it's real good. And it's like,
that's
slapping.
Okay.
That's
slapping. Okay.
I got
you. So you enjoy it. Yeah. Slap.
You enjoy it.
Yeah.
See?
All right.
If
the next word on the list is lightweight.
Yeah. Does anyone know this one?
That's like, it's not like a big deal.
Oh, mm-hmm. I was going to say something.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh.
I did not know this what that meant.
Like, you know, like this, that's light. You said lightweight, right?
Lightweight.
Yeah. Like that's lightweight work.
I thought it was like, oh, yo, handle my lightweight.
It could be that. Oh,
is it the same context as that?
Yeah.
Kind of.
Probably a little bit.
I've also heard it used meaning like also low key as a synonym for low key. Like, oh, that's
not that significant.
That's lightweight. Look at me
learning stuff. Like, yeah. I'm learning words, y'all.
I've heard it in like the workout community, like lifting.
That's what
when it's like really easy to do. It's
lightweight. Yeah.
The next word on the list is mad.
Mad.
Yo, that's mad weird.
Yeah. That's mad weird.
Yo, that's mad weird.
That is like the telltale you're from the North word.
Yeah.
That is definitely.
Yeah.
I learned that like in D.C. and when I lived in New York.
Yeah.
So who knows what it means. Though.
Don't worry. I see a couple West Coast words on this list for sure.
Mad.
Yeah.
A lot.
It's a unit of measurement.
That is very weird. Yo, that's mad weird. Don't do that. That's weird.
Yeah.
We're in good shape. I like that. Okay. Next word on the list is Johnning.
Oh, Johnning. You're wrong on that.
Am I wrong on that one?
Yeah.
I've never heard this one, so you have to fill me in.
So it's Johnning. Like, oh, they're Johnning on him.
Wait,
like,
I was mad confusion.
Mad,
wait,
I don't think
Johnny,
that
I was
correctly.
Like, what is that?
I don't even know what that is.
Wait, do that sentence again.
I was mad confusion.
I don't think that's you.
I was mad confusion. Wow.
No, I was mad confused.
But do we not say I'm confusion?
We do?
We never have said that.
We? I've never said that in my life.
I'm bad confusion.
Listen,
wow. It's typical all over again.
If Shakespeare can create 1,500 words, that I can part. Use them
okay.
how I want to.
Okay, Shakespearean. Right.
So Jonin. Who
Jonin.
Yo, they Jonin.
Oh, it's black people love language.
Can you be more, a little bit?
Like, you know, hey, black sweatshirt. You know, get over here with your little crochets.
Okay,
like,
we didn't talk junk about each other. First of all, they're not even crochets, so don't be coming for me.
Crochet, come here. Come here, crochet.
Fedora, come over here.
Glasses.
Come
here.
Okay, you know what I'm saying? Come on, little shirt. Yeah.
little shirt.
The next word is just giving.
It's giving.
Oh, it's giving.
Yeah.
What kind of vibe?
You got to snap with it.
You got to do it.
No, your hat.
Do the air grab.
Your hat is giving.
Thank you.
Period.
Them crochets are giving.
They're not crochets. They're individuals.
Them individuals is giving. Not giving. That means like it is great.
You're looking your best. Mm. Like if you walk down the steps and you come out, like your outfit is giving.
Right.
These
vibes,
test stores are giving.
You're right. Your effort could be giving.
Your effort could be giving. Mm-hmm. That behavior. Yeah.
It's
you
giving.
Can also
it's
be giving something like, oh, it's giving star student.
For
it's giving scholarly. It's giving, you know, you
could. It's giving, I'm calling your parents. Honest, if you keep talking,
is this not a gendered term though?
It has gender.
Boys can't give.
Boys can give, but boys ain't supposed to say it. I'm not supposed to be like.
So
yeah,
he's
that's
not
giving.
Gonna be like, oh, it's giving. But you could be like how she said it. I feel like you can say it like that because I've definitely been like, it's giving. Your parents are about to be called if you don't sit your little self down.
Right.
The next word on the list is my West Coast word, hella.
Hella.
You know.
Hella.
Yeah, another
hella.
Unit of measurement.
Isn't that
a unit of measurement.
Yeah. Like, that's hella weird.
All right, last word
the girls are getting
on the
it.
List.
Okay.
Finna. Oh,
that's a black unit.
That's an
like
old school one.
A black unit of measurement, too.
A black, yeah. It is, actually. It's
I'm
a time
finna
measurement.
I'm going to take the trash out.
I'm going to.
going to.
The yeah,
but that means
I'm going to.
Like
I'm about
hours.
To.
Yeah. That means I'm mentally prepping.
Like, I'm mentally getting myself ready for this excursion that I'm going to go on.
At some point. Yeah.
That really does mean I'm mentally prepping to do something. Yeah. I'm, like, really thinking about
like,
that.
Like, you kind of got to hype yourself, like, oh, I'm finna, you know? You really got to get into it.
I'm finna.
There's
also fixin'. If you're, like, a country black folk, you might say fixin' to, you know?
Oh, yeah,
that one too.
I'm fixin' to.
Yeah.
Ooh, all right.
That's all
that was a good one. Hey, listen, before we tap out.
Before we tap out.
Yo, any word of love, light, inspiration, anything that we want to offer to the teacher community?
Yo, you got this. Like, honestly, you got this and you've made it this far. Continue to hustle it out. Continue to learn about the community and continue to be present in the community. And always remember, people remember how you make them feel, even if they don't remember your name.
I would say just be open, like have a disposition of curiosity, of openness, of awareness, of learning. And when people want to engage in this work, sometimes it comes along with shame. Like we find out that we did something inappropriate, or maybe we wish we would have known something before, or maybe we haven't been showing up the way we want to show up. Don't let the shame or the fear of doing the wrong thing make you like immobile, right? Just tap in, try to get over that hump of like the anxiety of how can I support? What do I do? And just start acting, like just start showing up spend less time worrying about how it's perceived and more time just like actually doing the work.
I would tell teachers like, yo, this is the year of yes.
Yes.
This is the year of yes. Like when opportunities come up, say yes, go for it.
Yeah.
Stop telling ourselves no. Stop talking ourselves out of opportunities to grow or do better. And also understand that, like, yo, the classroom is your stage.
Yeah.
It is not your movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And if we treat it accordingly.
It's definitely a stage.
You feel me? We deserve it all.
Yeah.
We deserve it all. Yes. And I think for teachers, so often we're used to being told no.
Yeah.
That we start telling ourselves no.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? And I want for us to be able to have it all. Teachers deserve luxury. Teachers deserve access. Teachers deserve abundance. Teachers deserve it all.
Yeah.
So act like it.
All right, yo, thank you so much for watching this takeover. Thank you, Teachers Off Duty, for inviting us out. And hopefully we get to come back. Y'all enjoy the rest of your night and your day.